Today we are talking about housing. Now, we're not looking at the built environment itself, you know, the physicalities, especially if you are someone with a disability. But if you're looking for somewhere to live and you want to know more about your rights, what are they and are there differences across the UK? Well, this is something that the Equalities and Human Rights Commission were interested in, and they have commissioned some work into that very topic. Now, we have with us Imogen Blood. Imogen, you were asked to carry out this work. So where do you actually start on something like this?
Yes, it's a hugely complicated area, Alan. And I think the more we got into trying to understand how the housing system works and what rights people have within it, the more we, you know, actually ended up kind of pulling our own hair out, trying to understand the complexity of it. But we began by looking at what there is already out there on the internet, because there's a lot of good housing advice already there if you know where to look. We looked at lots of the key websites relating to disability. We did a bit of roundup of what was already available. And then we undertook a massive online survey. We got out to 1,000 disabled people and organisations and representatives that advise them. And it was really clear from that actually more than advice is needed. There is, as the Equality and Human Rights Commission has highlighted, a hidden housing crisis facing disabled people across the UK. There simply isn't enough accessible and affordable housing available. But it also came out of that survey that people often really don't know what there is, they don't understand the jargon, they don't know what they're asking for, they don't know what they're entitled to, and that actually without knowing those things, you can't even start to advocate for your right to an accessible and affordable property. And we then started to sort of mock up some different ways in which we might present all the information that's out there, and took that back to 4 focus groups, a couple held in England, one in the north, one in the south, one in Wales, and one in Scotland, and took those kind of mock-ups back to groups of disabled people to ask them for their feedback and to also, really importantly, get their tips and experiences about sort of mining their way through the minefield that is trying to get a property and finding that finding a property that works for you.
Interesting point, Imogen, you made about the housing crisis. I think we're all very familiar with that. You know, people perhaps can't afford the deposits to buy a home. Their wages, perhaps, or income wouldn't support a mortgage, and a shortage of social housing as well. But when you throw disability into the mix, you know, that probably throws up a whole host of other questions. And I think maybe when you look at it as a landlord's market as well, they can also be quite picky and choosy about who they let to as well.
Absolutely. And I think none of what we've written in the guide, unfortunately, creates any sort of magic bullet to these really deep systemic problems around, you know, investment in housing and vision around making sure that housing's sufficiently accessible. And I, you know, feel deeply humbled by some of the feedback we've had from people saying, you know, even if I know my rights, it doesn't make any difference. There's nothing here that, you know, fits for my budget. So hugely kind of aware of that. But I think some of the things that the guidance can help you around is really understanding, have you exhausted all your entitlements to benefits in relation to housing? Have you thought about shared ownership? What does that even mean? What might it look like? Are you aware of affordable housing that housing associations might be renting out in your area, what that means and how that might differ from classic social housing? You know, there's a whole kind of realm of stuff out there which people need to know if they're going to really understand their housing options, as limited as they may be in some areas. I mean, I think it's really difficult if you don't understand the jargon, you don't know, you know, what you're putting into Google, you know, if you don't know what the kind of bit of legislation you're looking for is, if you're not quite sure what the scheme of assistance is, then that's what you need to be asking for in Scotland. If you're looking for adaptations, or you don't quite understand deposit, you know, our aim was really to bring that together, but also to make sure that there was the voice of real lived experience in this, giving their little tips of how they'd managed to get a successful adaptation done, or how they'd managed to push their local authority to give them a property that really worked for their needs. So there's lots of examples in there which I hope will help people. And there are, you know, quite a lot of examples in here specific to people with sight loss. I'm just thinking, for instance, we've got a case study about somebody living in a private rented flat who needs an assistance dog. And we've got some discussion in there, for instance, around whether or not the landlord has a right to refuse the assistance dog at the property. And we set out very clearly that actually that landlord would be a breach of the Equality Act. And we just kind of set out exactly, you know, what the person's rights would be under that situation. And that's obviously not going to remove the problem of landlords behaving in discriminatory ways and being dodgy, but hopefully it does at least mean that people have the confidence to know that actually, you know, I'm standing on solid legal ground here demanding the right to have an assistance dog at this property.
Adaptations is a great point, Imogen, because they can be simple. It can be, you know, colour contrast here or there, or it could be bigger architectural changes as well. So that may be things that people don't quite think of when they move in somewhere. You know, you just want to find somewhere straight away and think about all that later sometimes.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing is that people sometimes get put off a property because there's some feature of it that isn't accessible to them. But actually, if they understand, you know, what sorts of adaptations are out there and whether or not they have a right to make those adaptations, then that could open up that as a housing option. If, as you say, you know, somebody just needs to improve the lighting on the stairs, or they need to, you know, put some braille markers on the lift or whatever, you know, people need to understand whether that's doable. Then they can make the decision as to whether or not they might be best moving into a place and getting it adapted rather than moving along to try and find somewhere else that meets their needs. So I think that's really important.
Were there a lot of legal differences when you go from, say, Scotland to England to Wales, etc.? You've got different countries with different rules, different regulations, and I suppose you may know some of them if you live there, but perhaps if you are moving, say, from Scotland to England or vice versa, there are going to be some changes.
We're very much a UK-wide team. I had the great pleasure of working with Housing Options Scotland and with Disability Wales on this. So we had a view across the whole of Great Britain. And I think at first we thought you could probably just have one guide with little bits that you clicked on for the differences in England, Scotland and Wales. But actually, the more deeply we got into it, there were actually quite a lot of small differences and sometimes some quite significant ones. And also, of course, there are different organisations supporting disabled people in each of those three nations. And we've got lots of links to sources of further advice and support. And in the end, actually, we've ended up with three sort of standalone guides, which kind of mirror each other in terms of their structure. But we just felt actually there was, you know, such a lot of differences there in terms of the systems that it was really worth having them as standalone documents. But yeah, if you're moving from one to the other, you'll need to jump in and out of one guide and into the next.
I don't think there's any doubt, Imogen, that it's been a huge undertaking, you know, a huge piece of work. But what's come from this is really essential reading if you have a disability and you're looking for somewhere to live. So if people would like to learn more about the publications, where can they go?
Okay, so the publications are on the website of the Equality and Human Rights Commission. I'll read out the full kind of address, but I'd also tell you how to get there as well, if that's easier for some people. So equalityhumanrights.com/en/advice-and-guidance/housing-disabled-people-your-rights. So a right old mouthful there. So I'll tell you how to get there if it's difficult to write all of that down and act on it. So basically, you want to go to the Equality and Human Rights Commission. That'll come up in any search. And when you get to that page, you should find a tab that says Our Work. And Housing and Disabled People is the main project that comes up on that page. And on that page, there's a whole load of different stuff that's come out of the Equality and Human Rights Commission work on housing and disability. And on there, you'll find this Housing and Disabled People, Your Right. And on that page, you can open up these three different countrywide guides. And I would also just say, although these are really useful for people trying to find properties or move properties, they're also useful if you're in a property that either doesn't work for you, that you need to make changes to, or if you're having a wrangle with your landlord about something, particularly if it's disability related. There's also lots of guidance in here for, you know, what to do with dodgy landlords, how to make sure that your property is being kept at the right standard and is fully accessible to you.
Some essential reading there, Imogen, and thanks once again for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you, Alan.